Good morning, everyone. This morning, I'm here to talk a little bit about influenza vaccination and influenza vaccination rates in the context of what the science currently shows us. So we're going to look a little bit at the impact of low vaccination rates on some public health issues, as well as what providers can do to increase seasonal influenza vaccine uptake. So we know that since 2009 here in the U.S., the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices has recommended that all individuals over the age of 6 months receive an annual flu shot. Therefore, it follows that all of us as healthcare workers be recommended to receive the same. You get to see a four-month-old healthcare worker. The other recommendation that they added in 2009 was that influenza vaccine coverage among healthcare workers be monitored as a measure of quality of care. So this recommendation stems from the fact that when it comes to flu, prevention is the cornerstone of our treatment. We have supportive measures, we have some limited treatment options that are hampered by cost availability and already some resistance in terms of the medications that we can treat with. So we really focus on preventing flu. However, the ACIP's recommendation directly conflicts with the Cochrane Review from the same year, which states that there is not enough evidence to decide whether routine vaccination to prevent influenza in healthy adults is effective. And this report was based on the fact that prevention, even in years where there was well-matched influenza strains in the vaccine to the circulation, was efficacious, but that limiting influenza infection is only one part of the spectrum of clinical effectiveness. And that overall, even when there were those well-matched vaccines, influenza-like illnesses overall only reduced by about 15% in those years. The authors of the Cochrane Review from 2009 really felt that universal vaccination of healthy adults should achieve multiple goals, and those goals included reducing the spread of disease, reducing the economic loss due to working days lost, reducing morbidity and hospitalizations, and that of all the studies they reviewed, there really was limited evidence showing that all of those goals were achieved. So why did the U.S. differ and sort of diverge from what the Cochrane Review found? If we look at the U.K., the National Health Service recommends vaccination in these groups, which were pretty similar to what the U.S. was recommending prior to 2009. So we have adults 65 and older, pregnant women, people living in long-term care institutional settings, people who are the primary caregivers of an elderly person, healthcare workers, and then if you have any one of these many medical conditions. So why did the U.S. take it a step further to everyone over the age of 6 months? Well, one thing the U.S. looked at was when we look at these populations, and we start to look at the fact that 9.3% of the population in the U.S. has a diagnosis of diabetes. 10% of adults over 65 have chronic kidney disease. 2% of our population has heart disease. When we start to add all these up, we're getting at a very large chunk of our population. The other thing that we looked at is one of the World Health Organization goals is to increase production capacity of influenza vaccines to be prepared for a possible pandemic. And one way to encourage vaccine manufacturers to increase their production capacity is to buy more vaccine. So if we extend the goal in the U.S. to vaccinate universally, we're encouraging them to increase their capacity. So should a pandemic happen, we would be able to generate more vaccine faster. So those are a few things that factored in. So where are we now? So the recommendations changed in 2009, which also had the H1N1 outbreak. And looking back at last year, these are the universal or the U.S. vaccination rates by state. And you can see we're starting to creep up overall towards 50 to 60% of our population, which is a definite improvement, but still leaves us a lot of ways to go. And one of the things I wanted to look at were some of the subpopulations that are still considered at risk. So this is taken right from the CDC because it's adorable. And what it shows is last year, only 52% of pregnant women in the U.S. got a flu shot. And we know they're one of the most at-risk groups that we are trying to encourage to be vaccinated. So we definitely see there's been a huge increase from 2007-2008 flu season, where there was less than 30%, up to 52% last year. But the past couple of years, we've really sort of leveled off there. We had an immediate increase, and then we've sort of reached stagnation. Some other at-risk populations. Last year, Adama and Sinsgiri showed a 60% vaccination rate in patients in the U.S. with diabetes. And one study that I looked at that was very interesting was looking at cancer survivors, so people that have a lot of contact with the healthcare system, showed that in Korean cancer survivors under the age of 65, they were much more likely than their peers to have received a flu vaccine. But if you looked at them over the age of 65, they were pretty much on par with the rest of the population. So I always think about, you know, where we fall as healthcare workers. We know there's been a big push to improve vaccination rates in healthcare workers, sort of moving towards that 90% as a benchmark. And if we look back over the past couple of years, just like in the regular population, the percentage of healthcare workers across the U.S. being vaccinated has increased. Last year, it's estimated that 75% of the healthcare workers in the U.S. received their flu vaccine. But with a goal of 90%, only two groups broke that 90% benchmark. And those are physicians, regardless of where they're employed, have achieved a greater than 90% vaccination rate, and healthcare workers that work in sites where their employer mandates vaccination. So I always think if we can't police ourselves as healthcare workers and we're going to buy into these recommendations, how can we expect our patients to follow suit? So I always like to talk a little bit about healthcare workers first. So this is from a review I did of studies that look solely at healthcare workers and address the reasons those who refuse vaccination provided for not receiving the vaccine at that time. So you can see some things that come across: concerns about side effects, concerns about vaccine efficacy, the thought that there's no personal need for vaccination, where most of these healthcare workers fall into that healthy adult group, lack of time, a significant number that don't believe in vaccines, and then some other reasons. And what I've done here is provided from these studies the total percentage of people who responded to that, and then where it was available, the data, I broke it down by physicians and nurses as sort of two overwhelming groups, in that we have very different reasons when physicians refuse vaccination compared to nurses. One of the biggest things that physicians report as a barrier to vaccination is usually time and access, whereas if you look at the study by Tappanen and all, 75% of the nurses didn't actually think the flu vaccine was efficacious, and that was their reason for refusal. And the thing is, and we'll look at this with the general population, but as we move forward and we develop programs, there is many reasons for not being vaccinated as there are people refusing vaccination. So while people fall into some of these categories, it's really hard to group them and address them in that one way. Looking at a different population, this study looked at school employees in Utah and what they gave as reasons for not being vaccinated. And what I thought was interesting was it compared their reasons for influenza vaccine versus an adult booster for MMR. So for the adult booster for MMR, most of them didn't get it because they didn't understand if they needed it or not. They thought they had received it in childhood and didn't understand the need for a booster. Versus influenza, where 13% of them did not believe that getting immunized would help them. Followed shortly by the time and access issue, as well as I'm a healthy adult, therefore flu is not a problem for me. And What is happening is people are identifying influenza vaccine and trying to figure out whether or not there is a true need for them to receive it as a healthy adult. And that compounds their decision-making, as does the burden of having the need for an annual vaccination as opposed to other vaccines where there's a one-and-done mentality with regards to things like MMR or even tetanus with every 10 years. So what things positively influence vaccination? In healthcare workers, we see a history of previous vaccination is really key. Likewise, recommendation by the personal provider. So whatever knowledge you have as a healthcare worker, when your personal provider still recommends you get the flu vaccine, we see uptake increase. Increasing age, removal of administrative barriers. In the general population, what we see is the increased number of office visits, increased contact with the healthcare system, increased the likelihood of vaccination in privately insured children and adults. Again, the extremes of age, and that also corresponds with increased visits and easy access. So last year, we saw 18% of the population be vaccinated in pharmacies overall and 17% in the workplace. Likewise, people who perceive the risk of flu as being high and a low risk of the vaccine are more likely to do it, as well as in the general population, that personal provider, in this case physician, recommendation. However, mandatory vaccination rules also help. Connecticut required all children attending daycare to receive at least one dose of the flu vaccine, and that increased their rates from under 70% to 84% in 2 years. Also going along with this, they saw a 12% decrease in influenza-associated hospitalization in that same age group of children. What I did find interesting in Connecticut was 5% of the children in the study were considered exempt from influenza vaccination due to religious or other reasons, versus only 2% of the children who listed that for all other vaccinations. So there is still a difference in parents' perceptions of the flu vaccine. Things we need to think of in our influenza vaccination program are that disparities still exist in vaccination rate. And some disparities are still based on insurance status and insurance type. So even with the Affordable Care Act rolling out, there is a difference in people who have private versus public insurance to date. We'll see if that changes, as well as the type of provider, if it's a public provider or a private provider. Race plays a huge role as well. So patients with diabetes who identified as white were significantly more likely to be vaccinated than those who identified as African American. Another study found that adults over 65 years had almost 70% vaccination rates in Caucasians versus 55% in African Americans. And then also, like we've been talking a lot about at this conference, zip code and the percentage of families living in poverty. As that went up, the odds of vaccination decreased. So what do we need to do? Even though we have this goal of universal vaccination for everyone in the U.S. over 6 months of age, we can't take a blanket approach. We still need to focus on multimodal, population-specific intervention programs to be successful. We still need to target specific at-risk populations, as well as those populations that have had lower vaccination rates to date as a result of disparities. We need to also be able to, with a lot of our families, articulate the rationale for universal coverage given the existing state of the science. So we can't sweep under the rug for a lot of our more and more educated consumers, right? The internet, everyone's on there. We can't just sweep under the rug the science. We need to be able to articulate our rationale for promoting this program in the face of different evidence and different policies in other developed nations. That's all. Thank you.